The headline number is, as we know, e-commerce sales, e-commerce brands are selling more orders. Those have grown in the last year. So if we're just talking in the last year, about 10% more orders over the last year, but revenue is not keeping up. So revenue is like 4 to 5% growth. So it's still growth. We love growth, but it's not growing at the rate it should be.
Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and Sheriff Tevin E. Taylor here with you on Supply Chain Now. Tevin, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Fantastic. We got a great show here today. Folks, we're bringing back one of our faves here today as we dive into a compelling topic. Orders are up, profits are down, but as the legendary Marvin Gaye would ask, what's going on, Tevin? We're diving into all that here today. I'm not going to sing for y'all, folks. Not going to ruin your day, but we're going to be unpacking why e-commerce growth today leaves a lot less room for operational mistakes. We're going to be sharing some of the assumptions that might be costing your team and your organization. And we're going to be sharing what leading organizations are doing and changing right now to protect margin, delight customers, all without slowing down growth. All of that and much, much more, folks. This is going to be one of your most practical and actionable hours of the day. Now, Tevin, given your proven track record of making stuff happen in global supply chain, especially logistics, warehousing, transportation, technology, I'm looking forward to your insights here today. Should be a good one, huh?
I'm looking forward to sharing them. And of course, with Lori, it's going to be an amazing conversation.
It always is one of my favorite hours of each month. So let's get to work welcoming in the one and only Lori Boyer, Director of Content Marketing with EasyPost, also host of a wonderful podcast called Unboxing Logistics. Make sure you add that to your iPhone or smart device, because Lori always brings the heat and has that been there, done that perspective. So get your thinking caps on, folks. Let's welcome in Lori. Hey, Lori, how you doing today?
So good. Great to see you both. Two of my favorites. I'm really excited.
Same, all the way around. And we had a great pre-show session. Very lively, as always. And hey, want to say hello to, hey, Vishal, great to have you back with us. Let us know what part of the world you are tuned in from and look forward to your perspective. But Lori and Tevin, a couple things here. Let's start with a fun warming question. And I want to start by recognizing it's Bunker Heel Day, right? It is Global Garbage Professional Day. We got to celebrate those folks that all of us depend on every day. And then I'm gonna wrap on this one here. It is National Eat Your Vegetables Day. So Lori and Tevin, we're really going to create some friction here, I'm afraid. I want to know your favorite vegetable and your least favorite vegetable. So Lori, and we're going to start with you, putting you on the spot, your thoughts.
Oh, so in my family, broccoli is beloved. It is so loved. Once when my daughter was about 2 years old, I was in the store and pushing her around and she was like, Mommy, I want broccoli, broccoli. And I was like, no broccoli. We already had broccoli at home. And she's like, Mommy, broccoli. And some lady was like, wow, I wish I could get my kids to beg for broccoli. So broccoli is very popular. Eating a little tree makes everyone happy, right? But I hate Brussels sprouts. They're so bitter and gross and just so disgusting. So if you say Brussels sprouts, Tevin, I'm seeing it in your eyes. We're going to fight.
So let's lean into that challenge. Tevin, your favorite and your least favorite.
I mean, I do like Brussels sprouts. It's not my favorite. The easiest is a potato. Like, who doesn't love potatoes? It's almost hard to call it a vegetable, but, you know, I like French fries, so I like potatoes. But the least favorite, by far, onions. I won't eat anything with onions. If it has onions in it, you got to take it out. I'll pick it out. My in-laws make fun of me because they can't cook what they want because I'm like, I don't want onions. So, no onions.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I thought I loved you, Tevin, until you're breaking my heart with that.
Me too. I love onions.
You know, I wasn't a big fan of Brussels sprouts either, Lori, until Amanda starts making them with balsamic and bacon. and they are really, really good.
So you're saying if you can make them not taste like Brussels sprouts, then they're good. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
All right. Well, it's great to see everybody. And Lori, let's do this. I know you're climbing up the appearance charts here, and we really enjoy these conversations. It helps a lot of people. We get lots of feedback. But for our new audience members, let's level set a bit. Tell us about yourself and what Easy Post does in a nutshell.
You bet. I'm Lori Boyer. I oversee all the content at Easy Post. Basically, my whole life is spent just figuring. I'm the biggest nerd you'll ever meet. So I spend way too much time reading data and trends. And there's something about seeing changes in the world and what's happening and what's exciting in shipping and logistics. My husband's like, that sounds so boring. But we all know it's super interesting. So that's what I do. And I work at Easy Post. So Easy Post, if you don't know us, we're a shipping technology platform, basically the infrastructure layer that would connect e-commerce, logistics, shipping to 100 plus carriers through just one API. So instead of managing all those integrations one by one, you connect just to the one. We handle the complexity. We also use AI these days because AI's sweet. But we have billions of records, and so you're able to use AI to kind of see which shippers you should use when, which lanes, kind of at the actual label level. So that's where we're at. And I'm so excited about this new interesting data that's come out that we're going to talk about today.
Well, you bring it each time, and I love the data factoids that you always bring with you. And Tevin, I'm not the only one, right?
No, you're not the only one. I'm a nerd in supply chain as well. So, Lori, I'm excited to hear about the data and hopefully benefit from it as well.
That's right.
Well, so let's dive in. And I want to start with what I shared kind of on the opener, right? E-commerce has grown, continues to grow, but profits, it's not the same story. So what's going on here, Lori?
Okay. So for me, I think this is something, as I've talked to people, that a lot of operators are kind of feeling in their gut. They just haven't been able to kind of put words to it. So the headline number is, as we know, e-commerce sales, e-commerce brands are selling more orders. Those have grown in the last year. So if we're just talking in the last year, about 10% more orders over the last year. But revenue is not keeping up. So revenue is like 4 to 5% growth. So it's still growth. We love growth. But it's not growing at the rate it should be. So for some of the people I've talked to, margin is barely moving at all. So you kind of have this weird situation where like business is technically growing. The team's working harder than ever, more volume showing up in the business, but the financial reward is not what it needs to be. So that's kind of where we're at and what we want to talk about, how to kind of avoid some of the pitfalls of just let's work more, but not actually make that much more money.
Yeah, what a great way to tee it up. And are you seeing the similar thing out there, Tevin?
Yeah, it's similar. I mean, look, your order volume can go up, but the cost behind that order, they're also going up. But there are other things that are related to profitability that I'm sure we'll discuss. But you know, I'm seeing it in the 3PL space. Volume doesn't necessarily make up for sins of the cost going up as well.
Right. Okay, so it begs a question, Lori. You know, is this really different from, say, you know, 5 years ago, or kind of playing off what we heard there from Tevin, the same old costs are up story? Your thoughts?
Right. That's such a great question. And this is one of the areas I'm always paying close attention to, because sometimes in the news, you'll be like, whoa, massive issue. But then you're like, oh, wait, this is the same issue we had like 10 years ago. But this one is genuinely different. Okay. So 5 years ago, course, we're hitting kind of just a little bit post-COVID now these days, but 5 years ago, you could grow even though you would have inefficiencies. But we are no longer seeing that anymore. This is more orders back then meant more revenue, meant more margin. The math was forgiving. And if the cost did creep up a little bit, volume typically covered it, growth offset it. The model was kind of correcting. But these days, in the last 5 years, our CAC, our customer acquisition costs, are up 60%. That's a really, really big jump in how much it costs to just get a new customer. And then the cost of meeting the customer's expectations from, you know, free shipping, 2-day delivery, returns, all of that used to be kind of a competitive advantage, and it's now the baseline requirements. So when we're talking about customer expectations, what used to seem like awesome is now the standard. And then you throw in all the complexity of, you know, you've got more carriers, more SKUs, more markets, your warehouses are having to work hard. You're getting all this extra operational kind of tax that nobody budgeted for because you just didn't expect it. So yeah, 5 years ago, you could totally just kind of paper over a lot of your growth. But today, it's becoming a lot more of a challenge.
Yep. Paper mache would come in handy those 5 years ago. Now it's a whole different game. And, you know, complexity costs money that Lori is sharing there. And one other quick point before I get you way in, Tevin. You know, interesting, these customer acquisition costs, CAC, as Lori mentioned, it really varies from sector to sector. Fashion can be $90 to $120 per new customer. Mm-hmm. Electronics could be approaching $400 plus per customer. Pet care, a little easier, 68 to 90 based on different research out there. But Tevin, your thoughts on the differences from, say, 5 years ago to now?
Yeah, Lori's right. You know, more volume generally meant that you had better economics, better P&L. I mean, today, complexity is that tax she talks about. It's a hidden tax on growth. So, you know, growth used to be there to help create efficiencies. Now it's unmanaged growth really often creates a complexity, and it shows up in labor exceptions, customer service, delivery failures, all that wrapped into the warehouse. So those costs kind of elevate, and that complexity is really why you're seeing a margin hit.
Mm. And let's make no mistake about it. Customers nor team members like that list of headaches that Tevin just shared with us.
Hopefully they don't turn that video into what they listen to while they're trying to fall asleep at night.
All right. So Lori, big question here, right? Okay. Why is all this happening? Tell us more.
Oh, Scott, the honest answer is that everyone's working really hard. The effort's real, but the model has really changed underneath us. So, and I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean it like literally. The operating assumptions that made e-commerce so profitable a few years ago are starting to actually work against us. So I guess here's a good way to think about it. I'd say, if you talk to most e-commerce people, they're going to tell you that they're doing everything right, right? They're adding channels, they're growing their SKU catalog, they're expanding to new markets, they're meeting customer expectations when it comes to speed, when it comes to returns. All of it's true. And you're doing all the right things, but they all just cost a lot more. So what I would like to say, and where I recommend here of what's going on, is that we need to stop thinking about how do we grow faster and start looking at what parts of our growth or which parts of our business are actually the really profitable parts. You know, every time you add a new carrier, you got complexity. Every time you add a new channel, you're, you know, needing to put out more ad money, all of that. So we need to be starting to pay attention, not just to growth, but to what is profitable. They're very, very different questions. And right now, there's not very many people who are really focused on that second one.
Lori, that's great advice already. And Tevin, she's right. You know, it's not like our customer portfolio is not like going to our pantry and everything is a can of corn, which would be a very boring diet. But speak to what we heard there from Lori, Tevin.
Yeah, I heard new. So new sales channels, new markets, new carriers, new delivery promises, all of that bundled together. It doesn't show up on the P&L, but some reason you see that things aren't moving in the right direction. So stop expanding so much and so fast. Look at what's profitable and be more precise in your targets. So she's spot on. Precision, profitability, that's going to be the focus versus just, you know, the shotgun approach of trying to do everything at every channel.
I like it. All right. So question for you, Lori. Based on all the research and your massive customer portfolio and what you're seeing out in the industry, are brands just getting priced out of customer acquisition?
Yeah. I mean, some of them, yeah, genuinely, yeah. I would say, okay, so let me check my number. The average retail customer acquisition cost, and we're talking average, and I actually want to talk about death of averages because actually looking at averages is one of our issues, but we'll come back to that. The average retail customer acquisition cost in 2024 was $226. That's going to be totally different across industries. That's up 7% from the year over year, 60% from 5 years. Oh, and that was in 2025. Sorry, not 2024. And that is all before you even factor in like returns. So if a first-time customer returns their order, which happens 17% of the time, you've likely lost money on that new customer, on that particular order. You're at, but the most important insight, I think, is that the what the data says about where the money actually is. Almost half of returns come because the product didn't match expectations. That's something that you can totally handle. You know, content, promise. Someday we'll have to have a good return session because we can talk about that for 75 hours. But this is one thing I really want to say. Acquiring a new customer costs up to 25 times more than keeping. It's 5 to 25. And your top 5% of current customers, top 5%, generate 35% of your revenue. Repeat customers are only 21% of your customer base, 1 in 5, but they generate almost half of all orders. So the math is clear to me. Your profit is concentrated in kind of this small group of customers that you as a brand are often treating exactly the same as customers who are not profitable. So the brands that I feel like are really figuring this out are those who are putting the investment and their focus on those really high profitable customers, looking at their post-purchase experience, looking at their delivery experience, looking at all those things that are going to make them happy, keep them around, rather than just constantly trying to work to fill your funnel with new expensive customers all the time. And we did that a lot in the past, like more. We need to be focusing where we're profitable.
Tevin, in addition to Lori's data there, I recall a study from years ago, probably a decade ago, from Bain & Company. And their findings showed that a 5% improvement in customer retention can increase profits, according to their research, 25 to 95%, depending on the industry.
Massive.
The math is going to math. It pays to retain, not just gain. Your thoughts, Tevin?
Yeah, that math seems worthwhile to me. I don't know. It's interesting. We've had this conversation since I've been in the industry. I guess retention's not as exciting as going after new growth and new sales. Surely you'd think you want to spend more money retaining because the cost of acquiring is so much. So, you know, the real economics behind not just e-commerce, but all commerce should be driven by repeat purchases. You want to cover not only the acquisition costs, but really your company and everything you do is funded by the current customer. So let's make them happy, make that work, and then go after the right profitable growth from there. So love what you're saying. It just, I think this is something 30 years from now, they're still going to be saying it's, and I'm not sure why though.
It might be psychological, Tevin, right? Like, because what you're saying, I get it. Like, even here, at all the companies I've worked for, there's channels celebrating the new sales, the new things that came in, but not so much of like, oh, but this customer repurchased for the 600th time, right? It's a psychological, like, shiny new.
It's like that McDonald's customer counter, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't count how many times they'd served the same customer, because I bet that'd be a big number too. They always counted new customers,
new
right? Customers served. All right. So you mentioned earlier in your response, the death of averages.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Okay. So this is where I think it's really important. Our dashboards are lying to us. Honestly, they're polite, but they're lying to us. If we look at our average order value, the average shipping cost, the average return rates, those numbers are going to contain both the very best, those really profitable orders, and your super unprofitable orders, but they're all kind of being treated as the same thing. So the problem is that our most profitable orders and the most destructive ones are both part of that average, but they make it so that you don't see them as well. So you're only looking at the average. I'd say, okay, so let's look at it in practice. So let's say you've got this cohort of super loyal customers who are ordering frequently. They hardly ever return. These types of people spend 67% more than first-time buyers. But then you've got this other cohort of first-time buyers. You got them. You paid an ad to get them. They placed a $22 order. They returned it. It cost you $10 in fulfillment, $7 in returning, and suddenly you didn't even make anything. But both of these are just averaged out. And so you don't really see them. They both become a little bit invisible, but both of them influence your decisions, like on, oh, what service level should I be doing? What carrier selection should I make? What should my return policy be? How much should I be spending on marketing they're both impacting equally, even though they represent totally different profitability amounts. So we're making our decisions based on average, because it's easy. I mean, obviously that makes sense. But what really, really matters is your contribution margin per order. What did this specific order actually give you? How much revenue did you make after you take into account the cost to acquire the customer, the cost to fulfill the order, the cost to ship it, the probability that it's coming back? And most people just don't have that number. They know the revenue, they know the averages, they know their shipping costs in aggregate, they know their return rates, but they don't know how to connect it all. So, and it's hard because they are typically sitting in different systems. But here's the thing, you guys, once you have that number, every other decision can change. You make different choices for different orders. You're going to identify which customers deserve the premium delivery, which ones need proactive communication, which ones need to make sure that they've got the perfect visibility. So yeah, at Easy Pulse, we see this on like a massive scale because, you know, across billions of shipments, it can make a huge amount of money. We just need to make sure that we're individualizing the way we're treating different orders. But first you have to know what it is, what the contribution margin per order is.
Right. Tevin, you used the word precision earlier.
Sure.
And there is a tremendous opportunity to follow Lori's proven advice that's based on data and industry and reality and apply precision customer by customer, especially leaning into the state of technology these days. But your thoughts on what we heard there from Lori.
Tevin. Yeah, I'll be a little long-winded here, but you know, averages are like your head's in the oven, your foot's in an ice bucket, but your temperature is good, right? So the thing about averages, like let's say you're making a lot of money on a customer and then you're losing money on another customer. Those are both bad, by the way. If you're making too much money on a customer, you're going to lose that customer because you're probably priced too heavy. If you're not making any money, that customer is happy because they're getting the same service as everybody else is getting. So you've got to evaluate. I love the contribution margin, the precision of knowing where you are per client and where that profitability is. You want to protect the one maybe you're charging too much to because they will leave you and they will be so sad that you are charging them too much. And then the person that's not paying enough, they might be sad, but you're not making money on them anyway. So guess what? That's not a customer you want, or you need to adjust what you're doing to make sure you are making money. And it helps your complete business model to look at it per customer. If you look at averages, on average, you think your business is doing well because you're looking at the wrong number.
Mm. All right. Pardon my distraction, but I had to write that down. Let's see. Head in the oven, foot in the ice box. Bucket. All right. Yeah. I love that. I love that. I'm going to steal that from you.
So true. It's so true.
So, Lori, you've made clear that one of the things that we got to be looking at is contribution margin per order. Mm-hmm. But how else would you answer the question, what should folks be looking at?
Okay. I mean, it's hard. Most people don't have that number, the contribution per order. I get it. I mean, it requires connecting data in three or four different systems. Maybe you've got your CAC, your customer acquisition in marketing. You've got your fulfillment in your 3PL invoice. You've got your shipping spend in your carrier portal like Easy Post. Your return might be in your OMS. And stitching them together, it seems a little bit hard. But when you do, it is so, so worth it. So worth it. You might see like a specific product that has a 40% return rate and that's like killing you. Or you get, oh, this specific cohort of customers who are generating tons of revenue. What kind of experience should we be giving them? So it's really, really worth it. But I'm going to say start. Everybody's going to be shocked. Start with a spreadsheet. I know we all love our technology, but listen, you don't have to have a platform. I'm sure you can get some. Start with a spreadsheet. Pull 3 months of your orders. Add your CAC by acquisition channel if you can, or you can estimate it if you don't have it. Add fulfillment cost per order. Add your shipping costs per label. Add a return flag, and then calculate your margin per order. It's math, it's a spreadsheet, but you can sort by margin. What is your bottom 20%? What are you seeing? Exactly what Tevin was saying. Where are we losing money? We do not need to be spending extra to make those people have some sort of amazing experience. Where are your top? What are the orders? Especially look for commonalities. What are you seeing? Like, oh, wow, wait, maybe even just shipping in a certain zone is putting people really expensive. Or maybe, you know, certain marketing platforms are really killing it and you can bring in more customers there. You need to look for trends, similarities, and that's where the work really starts. So you don't need to get a fancy system to start.
Mm. All right. So Lori, I love that Frank, keep it real advice. And I gotta
Not very often I recommend spreadsheets. There's probably like 10 people dying right now.
Well, Tevin, your thoughts on the advice we heard there from Lori?
It's the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid, right? So it's like
sometimes we do go too much.
Like, why not just use? Well, sometimes it's just going back to the basics. I mean, the spreadsheet approach and what you're saying, it's really just the first step of giving visibility to a problem. You know, you don't need a massive system to do that. You can do it in simple terms. And then you can figure out what to kind of bring in to fix the issues. But, you know, start with the simple, you know, bring crayons to the meeting. Everybody will be excited and then go from there.
Now, honestly, because sometimes I think we think, oh, I can't do it unless I have a fancy technology. It's almost like our justification, our excuse. Well, it would be nice if we could have visibility, but I can't. They don't connect. Mm. Right. Look, yeah. We can't.
IT hasn't given me the tools to figure out.
Sometimes it's back to the good old fashioned tools we've got.
There you go.
Right. And whatever powers knowledge and action, right? For some, this can be a spreadsheet. Lori and Tevin aren't saying, hey, run your $1 billion supply chain with spreadsheets. No one is saying that.
No.
I love Lori's practical advice here because it's a good gut check. So, all right. So once we can see which orders are profitable, Lori, what comes next?
Okay. So I would then segment them. So again, not by a lot of the traditional segments. We'd segment by demographics or by acquisition channel or whatever. No, segment them into their actual order economics. So who are the most profitable? What do those order profiles look like? What is their average order frequency? I'd look at their return rate, their shipping destination, what it costs to acquire them. And then once you can see that really clearly, you can start to identify new customers who are looking like those profitable ones, but are just a little earlier in their relationship, and really focus on keeping those. Those are going to be, you know, you got your ideal customer here. You see some who have that potential, really do well. And then I would say the second thing is to differentiate your service levels. Your top customers deserve a better delivery promise, more reliable carrier selection on specific lanes. They deserve proactive communication. They deserve quick returns. A loyalty customer in zone 4 who orders every 3 weeks, you should have them routed differently than a first-time buyer in zone 7 on a 10-buck order. You know, not to make it worse, just right-sized. Right? The $10 order doesn't need to have overnight shipping and all this amazing stuff. Put your money into the customers that are really worth it. And then I have one more thing. Third thing I would say is use technology. Again, I'm not all spreadsheets. Use technology to make those decisions at scale without manual rules, because that is true. When we're in the shipping industry and there are a lot of stuff going on, you need to be able to do that. So when you segment your customers and build routing rules, it works until you have like 6,000 different profiles and 100 different rules and scares. This is where you need to use technology, AI, to you make the decisions on what works, and then you put them into place so that you can execute those, you know, at the shipment level, at the specific package level. There was a customer that I was working with recently that was doing something like this. They just let AI evaluate every single shipment against all of the different data that they'd brought in. And then their labels were being evaluated based on the rules they'd put in instead of those averages, that death by averages kind of thing. And the results, they were just getting cheaper, but also better. I feel like that's rare sometimes. Usually it's like, if it's faster, then it's going to cost more. And if it's cheaper, then your performance is going to be worse. But when you do use AI and technology there, this is where it really, really works, is finding those areas where you can get both and get really accurate decisions. So yeah, technology can absolutely help, but technology is only useful as the strategic question you're asking it to answer. So if you're not asking it the right things, if you're not looking at what's important, those really profitable orders, which order matters most, what does the right experience look for each different group? That's when you run into problems. Defaults of just across the board for everyone is going to make it so that your profit margins are getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Which is no bueno. Just level set there. All right, two quick things, Tevin, that I love that that Lori mentioned. One, a little clarification, because I think she mentioned the LTV acronym. So just to make sure everybody is with us, lifetime LTV. Value, right? Yep. Lifetime value. Some folks, some organizations call that CLV or CLTV, I believe, but just make sure everybody's with us. But more importantly, to her point, on different decisions for different orders. Folks, you take a cookie cutter approach at your own peril. And it's easier to not take a cookie cutter approach here in 2026. Tevin, what'd you hear there from?
Yeah, Lori? I mean, I'm staying in a Hilton hotel because 26 years ago, I started staying in Hilton and they were smart enough to get me hooked on Hilton Honor Points, right? Mm-hmm. I fly American Airlines because of the loyalty program, like they do segment you because they, you know, they treat me differently because of how much money I spend with their brand. The same's true in every commerce division. If you try to treat all customers equally, they'll switch brands very quickly because there's nothing tying you to that brand and that experience. If everybody gets the same experience, then there is no real experience. So I do like the AI key as well. So, I mean, AI is going to help make thousands of operational decisions, and it's going to make things smoother and faster where you can focus on strategy and customer experience versus all the noise that happens in operations. So that's kind of my feedback on that topic.
I like it. I like it. And hey, let's apply AI to logistics. We don't need AI to make toast, right? Let's keep it simple. But we
use some AI toast.
Everybody is talking and doing using AI in logistics. And I'm curious, Lori, given, again, you got your finger on the pulse mm-hmm. of industry like few do. What are you seeing that actually works right now?
Okay. I think the AI story in logistics is actually a little bit boring. And I think, say that as a compliment, and you both know how much I love AI. But the reason I say boring is because the applications that are actually working and really making people profitable in the industry right now aren't like the science fiction sexy ones that you're like, holy crap, they took all my data and da-da-da, right? They are the ones that just are taking the decisions your team has typically made manually 1,000 times a day and making them better, faster. The clearest example I think I could think of is maybe I could point to like service level selection. Again, I live in the shipping world, so I always think back to shipping, but at the moment of label creation. So we've seen in the past, before AI, a lot of operations would pick a primary carrier, set the service level defaults, and then just kind of move on. And the routing logic would run underneath it all. So that's typically been static. It was built once. Maybe if they were being well-behaved, they would look at it quarterly and everything was kind of applied to the same label, regardless of what the data would say. And again, obviously with 25,000 labels a day or however many, those defaults would add really fast. With AI, that has really changed. And this is boring. It's underneath the line, but we had a customer recently, which I think was super fascinating. So they started using the AI tools to like look at their shipments. They were shipping with a certain carrier. They had multiple carriers, but one of their carriers that they used heavily, they weren't really happy with their rate, with the on-time rate. It wasn't, they were having a lot of late packages, 25,000 labels a day. You know, it was a lot of packages arriving late every day. So they started looking into like they were, we were working with them at EasyPost to look into like what could AI find? Is there something else they could do? So they were using AI. They evaluated each shipment at the moment of label creation. They looked at the destination zone, the package profile, the delivery window, the cost, and the historical performance data across what they could do with this. What's interesting here is they actually did not switch this carrier. They kept the carrier, was one of the big carriers. They didn't renegotiate a contract. They didn't change their packaging or fulfillment. They didn't add headcount, nothing like that. They just changed which service level was selected for each package, which zone they were using. They ended up improving. So they ended up saving $2 million a year, just simply in cost, which wasn't even what they were looking at, but also had about 250,000 fewer late deliveries over the year. And they didn't even switch carriers. That was simply an AI working to say, you're just making some label decisions wrong on which routes to use, which service levels to use. And then when you do that at scale, It's just so much easier than having a human do it 10 times a day. So that's where I see AI really working right now in specific use cases. When there's a lot of unorganized data that you might be able to take advantage of and kind of running below the scenes. So that's where we're seeing it be really effective and not necessarily making our toast yet, which I'm still ready for that. I'm okay with the toast, but that's the science fiction, I guess.
I love that. And I hate that AI is going to make whole wheat toast and make me put marmalade on it. But anyway, folks.
It's going to optimize for your healthiest diet, Scott.
I know. But one of the things I think is exciting, and maybe, you know, I talk about it a lot, but how AI is not only making decisions and decision-making process easier, but it's eliminating the need for humans to make the decisions more and more. And of course, that eliminates the need for meetings, for more meetings. We don't have to meet on the hour, every day. And all that's a beautiful thing.
And it really slows things down, right? Like you get into this meeting and suddenly you're spending 2 hours discussing what you should do when you could have just moved on.
Yeah, it could have been a Slack, it could have been an email. And it's, in more and more cases, it doesn't have to be anything at all because technology is eliminating human oversight or human decisions in some cases. Tevin, that case study that Lori shared, that dog will hunt, as they like to say here in Georgia. Your thoughts?
It absolutely will hunt. I've been using AI all wrong. I'm doing videos showing me dunking a basketball and the owner of my company. So I send those videos to him on a random basis, which aggravates him, which is fun. But, I mean, going to the case study and going to everything you're seeing in logistics, it is a boring story right now, but it's a good story, to your point. It's helping make decisions at scale. So selecting the right carrier, choosing the right service level, kind of predicting performance. It's doing all the optimizations that a lot of people are doing, but it's not replacing people. It's helping make the right decisions and putting people in positions to focus more on the customer. So I think that's the element people miss is, you know, it's kind of like meetings and PowerPoints. Now that you see that you can use AI, that time you were spending putting stuff together, you can focus more on how to make the customer experience better.
Lori, you know, a lot of brands assume faster delivery is always better. But of course, I've heard you push back because a lot of times we talk about that here. Mm-hmm. Why do you push back with both hands and all of your might against that dangerous assumption?
Okay, this is again where we're going back and we're kind of operating on something that was true 5 years ago. Customers have really changed as we've gotten really used to, you know, online shopping and all of that really booming. What's interesting, I didn't look it up, but I'm pretty sure it was fourth place. So for years, speed was the number one concern of customers when it came to shipping. It's now like number four. It might be number five. So what they actually want today is reliability. So in some ways, a package that says it's coming on Tuesday and comes on Tuesday, a customer likes that better than even a package that said it's going to come on Tuesday and comes on Monday, you know, or definitely not Thursday. We know if it's going to come late, they would much rather have known it was coming on Thursday and it came on Thursday than that you said it was going to come on Tuesday and it came on Thursday, even though it arrived the same day, they're okay. So people don't care as much about fast shipping as we once did. They want to know that it's reliable, that it's going to show up. They want visibility. So, you know, where's my order? What's going on? Customers need to know where their package is all the time. Those are both in the categories of being more important than just being fast. And so I think that you've got to make sure that, you know, you've got reliable delivery. So that's another thing to look at. If you get a reliable carrier who's going to be coming in 4 days in that zone, in that area, in that package level versus an unreliable one, you know, maybe who are having more of those late deliveries, like I talked about with that other customer, and it's 2-day delivery, that's probably not going to be worth it, even if it's the same cost. So data to make that you understand that it is really important to look and see on each carrier, each route, each delivery, what is going to be better. Faster is better if you can deliver it and it's not too expensive. The problem becomes doing it at scale and trying to think that you need to do it for everybody. We just don't anymore. That customer sentiment's actually shifting.
Mm. You know, I saw another related data factoid, and this is not going to sound new for folks that may have tuned in some of our previous conversations, Lori and Tevin. Some research shows that 98% of shoppers say the delivery experience highly influences brand loyalty. Now, that's probably not news to our smartest audience in all the world of global supply chain, but I think it's good to kind of put a data point on things like that. Tevin, your thoughts on Lori's perspective about some of those dangerous assumptions that companies out there are making?
Well, yeah, customers are building their expectations around a promise. And so you don't have to be the fastest, but you need to be accurate and dependable. So, you know, what's the old saying, you know, under promise, over deliver. So, you know, it's not under promising. It's just don't stretch yourself. You know, make sure you actually hit the target you're trying to hit. You don't have to be the fastest. I know people got kind of wrapped around the axle. Amazon delivers to me in 2 hours. It's not the 2 hours that matters. It's if you say 2 hours, make it 2 hours. If it needs to be tomorrow, make it tomorrow. But don't miss that window because they're building everything around that expectation.
Mm. I thought that old saying has something about a head in the oven and a foot in the icebox.
That's the other one. Yeah.
I love that one, Tevin. All right. So in your previous response, Lori, you used one of my favorite words. You used optionality.
Options.
So when you think about optionality in practice, what does that mean to you?
Okay. Traditionally, when we talk about carrier diversification, we talk cost only. You know, you're going to use multiple carriers because you'll have rate options and you can shop the best price and the best label. And that's true. I mean, it still matters. Obviously, we need to save. But I think it's not necessarily the most interesting version of getting options. And so optionality to me means something bigger. It means, you know, when UPS implements a 5.9% rate increase, which they have done recently, or FedEx does, or anyone else, USPS did their first fuel surcharges, all of that, that you have some other options of where to go. We're seeing, especially with the biggest carriers, whom I all love, they have a lot of surcharges going on. And a lot of the maybe smaller regional ones or some of the alternative carriers often have, you know, different options there. So if your carrier caps your daily pickup volume during peak season, which happens, we see too often with customers, you're not stuck with 3,000 orders you can't move. And it means that if a regional carrier is outperforming your primary character in a specific zone by 2 days and 40 cents a label or something, you can actually act on it without having to have a big project. So single carrier is like a single stock. It's doing great until it's not doing great. And then you don't really have a lot of options. So I think we need to look. The goal isn't just more carriers. Like in the example I shared earlier, it was just better decisions. So having access to five carriers isn't going to help if you're just doing the same old static routing logic that's, you know, treating everyone like an average and doing all of that. Optionality only has value when you're actually using it in the right way. So you got to turn your carrier strategy into a logistics tactic, into a margin strategy. It's got to be at margins.
So I want to say one of your key points there louder for all the folks in the back and outside having picnics, you know, whatever. It's the goal is not more carriers. Yeah. It's better decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's not theory. That goes back to the case study Laura's talking about, $2 million and over 270,000 less late deliveries. Wow. Those are much happier customers. Mm-hmm. And as we established up front, data-driven. Happier customers lead to repeat orders, and that's where the profit is, folks. This is not, hey, if I can understand it, anyone can understand it. Tevin, what'd you hear there from Lori?
Yeah, I mean, market shift, rates change, GRIs happen, capacities tightening. No single carrier is going to be your best solution for every shipment, for every geography, every zone, every objective. So this gives brands the flexibility to adapt quickly. And it's not just for the sake of adding carriers, because that does add complexity, but match that up to the fact that you can figure out, you know, which shipment needs to go to which geography and how it accomplishes what you want. So absolutely great for decision making, and it helps you have flexibility with your clients.
That's right. It's a slam dunk, eh, Tevin? All right. So bottom line, Lori, got to get to the bottom line, right? Okay. I love how you bring it to the bottom line here. What separates those operators out there, some are tuned in, that are winning right now? Really, they're finding success even in this highly disruptive era we're in versus those that are really just struggling.
Yeah, I would say, again, they are not optimizing just for volume. not for order volume, which was really what we focused on. And we still focus on. I mean, we want lots of people, but we want good orders. So be optimizing for order quality and not just volume. The operators who are protecting their margin right now would know that the stat, the contribution margin per order, or you're working towards it, actively be working towards it. The great operators are the ones who are treating delivery as a retention tool, not a cost center. Again, 76% of customers who have good delivery, they're going to come back. You should be building optionality in, like we talked about. So you're not held hostage every time a carrier raises a rate or capture volume or has just some storm issues or whatever's going on. The best operators have built systems to catch the exceptions before their customers do. A lot of orders go wrong. Keeping an eye on that, being proactive about it, and really just making the different decisions for different orders based on the priority and the revenue they're bringing in, instead of applying the same service level, the same delivery promises, the same fulfillment and post-purchase to everything across the board. It's not magic. It's not a technology problem, at least not primarily. Technology is great. It's a question of what questions are you asking about your own business. We cannot anymore win just by getting more orders, more orders, more orders. Instead, we need to be getting the right orders, the profitable orders, and treating them differently. You don't have to have 17 different buckets of people, but at least three. Super profitable, super non-profitable, and everybody else. Start at least with that and make sure that you're treating them differently. So they'll all go to the Hilton like Tevin. Or like me, I am somebody's dream customer because I have 7 kids. And so I buy so much stuff. If I'm buying so much stuff from you, you know, treat me well and make sure that when I have a return that you're dealing with it. And because that's a lot of money that gets lost if I go somewhere else.
Can you imagine Kroger or Walmart or whomever, when Lori walks in for the weekly grocery? Oh man, they're laying out the red carpet, getting their calculators ready. I mean, they're delighted. But Tevin, what did you, I think we heard a lot of, kidding aside, we heard a lot of grounded, actionable perspective in Lori's last response. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm wishing Lori's kids grew up where I was, because I'd have 5 kids and 2 on the bench just for a basketball game. That would have been awesome. But
I love basketball, Tevin. I played all through high school. So
there you go. You got a full team.
Only 5 feet tall.
So the best operators, she said it, like, you know, you got to look at customers that are profitable, orders that are profitable, but understand the true cost of delivery, but really tie that all into viewing logistics as, you know, retention strategy. It's not just transportation expense. Mm-hmm. It is good for the business. It's good for your revenue. It's good for profitability. We already talked about flexibility quite a bit, but look, the success is of any brand is going to be getting profitable orders, delivering consistently, and creating those customers who keep coming back again and again.
By the way, just to close the loop, make sure everybody's with us. We were implying this, but I don't think we mentioned it. Lori has a big, beautiful family. That's why the grocery stores are delighted. That's why Tevin's ready to staff a whole basketball program. Lori, for those operators out there, maybe they're listening or they're watching, maybe they're on the replay, watching us over on YouTube or what have you, on their podcast player. How does EasyPost actually help, and where do people start?
Okay, so EasyPost lies, as I've kind of mentioned, in the shipping piece. That's my world. There are multiple phases to this, and you want to hit all of them. EasyPost is in that shipping piece. It sounds narrow, but it's not really. Shipping is typically up to 15% of revenue, and we see a lot of brands who are just kind of managing it on autopilot. There's a lot of ways you can. I would say with EasyPost, look at we have an insights tool. So especially if you're an EasyPost customer, look at Luma AI Insights. It'll connect your shipping data, show you what you're actually spending by carrier, by lane, by service level, where the gaps are between what you're paying and what you could be paying. We find that most operators who go through that for the first time always find savings. They didn't know existed. The cost is sitting there. It was just defaults, right? From there, I would say, look at our AI Select, Luma AI Select. It takes it a step further. It'll automate that carrier and service level decision in the moment of the label creation. So every shipment just gets routed based on performance data rather than just a static rule. That's where we see a lot of that kind of 15% cost savings coming in. And honestly, beyond just Easy Post and getting that really good multi-carrier strategy, decision route, look at your data. A lot of brands just haven't done that at an order level. We're looking at averages. We're running on rules that worked 5 years ago that really aren't. And get in and set up some time for yourself to do that. But if you are an Easy Post customer, please just reach out. We can help walk you through. Our Luma AI tools are included with Easy Post, so it's part of what you're already getting. Let's chat and make sure that you're saving as much as you can, at least on the shipping portion. That's where Easy Post comes in.
Outstanding, Lori. And we've heard lots of feedback. We've had quite a few conversations together, and I love the conversations between the conversations, especially from folks that have worked with Easy Post. So folks, it's a massive opportunity. Tevin, I've got the toughest question of the whole day that I'm opposed to you, because Lori has shared a lot of competing thought-provoking moments and eureka moments and the like. But what is your top takeaway from today's conversation with the Lori Boyer?
I took a lot of notes here and chicken scratched it over here, but I think the one-liner that really is that the future belongs to brands that understand profitability of every order. They use technology to make better logistics decisions. And most importantly, they prioritize customer lifetime value over simply just acquiring more customers. That's the summary. You can't read my handwriting, but that's what I got.
I love that. I think you did an excellent job. And I would just add to that, folks, we talk all the time about what's within our control and what's outside of our control. And how we ship is almost perfectly within our control. So we got to ship smarter. And there's all sorts of ways we can do that. If you don't get help at Easy Post, get help somewhere, as I like to say. But it's a tremendous opportunity here. So we got some resources here. We're going to make sure folks know how to connect with Lori Boyer. I want to share a couple of these resources, starting with this one here. Y'all bring a whole tool belt, Lori. Every time we get together, you're sharing more tools with me that are oftentimes free to use and access. Folks, just like this one here, check out how you can use this multi-carrier strategy reference sheet to make much better decisions that will help your supply chain ecosystem. And then even better yet, and by the way, that's got five steps. Five steps. Man, I can follow a five-step
checklist. We can handle five.
Yeah. This other thing that we want to put more meat on the bone, so to speak, because Lori brought this up, and this is something I've been digging into for a couple weeks now. And that's this case study that she mentioned where that re-commerce platform that ships over 25,000 orders a day would leverage Easy Post Luma AI. Again, save $2 million, but even better yet, because I bet this saving over 200, or eliminating rather, over 270 late deliveries, that bottom line is probably a bigger number than the 2 million. Not changing carriers, not renegotiating terms, not even adding headcount. That is impressive, and you can learn more via that case study right there. Or, Lori, I know you welcome conversations. I know you get calls, LinkedIn invites, emails, you name it, when you join us here. How can folks best connect with you, Lori Boyer?
Yeah, please reach out. I'm on LinkedIn. I'll keep an eye for you there. You can email me, lboyer@easypost.com. But let me know what questions you have. Like I said, what I enjoy doing is figuring out what are new trends coming on, what challenges are you seeing. If you're having problems in certain areas, let me know. And I'm happy to gather the data and be your nerd friend who can help you see what you need to do and where you need to go. It doesn't need to be related to Easy Post at all. That's just something I'm really passionate about, is helping people be successful, because there are a lot of opportunities that we're often missing out on. So reach out. Happy to chat. Or you can join us again, my podcast, Unboxing Logistics. We have a great community over there as well. I could get a guest on that you're interested in hearing from. So just let me know.
Lori shared a couple different ways you can connect with her. Be sure to add Unboxing Logistics to your podcast player list. She's doing great work there. Okay, so Tevin Taylor.
Yes, sir.
Lori Boyer did not fake the funk on that nasty dunk here today, right? All I can think about is you slamming that basketball, Tevin. I got to see the video.
I'll show it to you.
Well, I need I need a dunking video. I'm never going to dunk.
Same, Lori, same. Man, I got like a 3-inch vertical. You know, I'll never dunk a basketball. Bring your questions big and small to Lori, whether it's about the podcast, whether it's about taking advantage of this massive opportunity to change how you ship and delight your customers even more, or anything we talked about here today. But I want to thank the one and only Lori Boyer with Easy Post. Lori, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you. I love your community. I always say I love chatting with you and Tevin here. Love this industry. We can be nerds and be happy and proud about it.
That's right. We need T-shirts. Supply chain nerds.
We're shipping nerds.
Unite. That's right. Shipping nerds. the feeling's mutual. So thanks for being here, Lori. And Tevin E. Taylor, always a pleasure. Always learn something when you pop in and I co-host these sessions with you. Thanks for being here, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, most importantly, thanks for all of our audience members out there. We appreciate all of the your support and the feedback that y'all keep sending us, because feedback is a blessing. But y'all know you got homework. And Lori gave you lots of options, back to optionality, right? Take one thing that Lori Boyer brought here today, just one thing, and maybe half a thing from Tevin too, and do something with it. Do something with it. Take action. Deeds, not words. And with that said, Scott Luton here on behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now team. Do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. We'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.